Go ahead and open your Bibles to Jeremiah chapter 44. And now let's establish a little bit of the historical background to this passage. It doesn't have a clear chronological date assigned to it, but we know it has to have happened after 587 BC when Jerusalem was destroyed and the few remaining Israelis were put under the care of Gedaliah, another Judean, that was going to be the Babylonian governor of those survivors. But he was assassinated, and the assassins were dealt with by other Judeans, but those rescuing Judeans decided that it was too dangerous to remain in the Promised Land. And so they took a large contingent of the remaining Jews down to Egypt. And they basically kidnapped the prophet Jeremiah at that time. And he warned them repeatedly that they shouldn't be going to Egypt, that any Jew going to Egypt thinking they were going to be safe there was wrong, that God's judgment was going to be against them, that they needed to go back to the Promised Land and wait it out like they were told to in the first place. And they didn't listen to that either. Jeremiah even buried some rocks at one of the palaces at Tapanhes in the Delta and said, Nebuchadnezzar is going to set his portable throne right here. And when he does, he is going to bring God's judgment, not just against the Egyptians, but he's going to bring God's judgment against any Judeans that are down here because they think they're avoiding all of that. Well, this chapter is a continuation of that warning. Now, I put it at this point in my chronology because I want to highlight what will happen historically in Egypt with Nebuchadnezzar finally arriving. Right around 570 BC, Pharaoh Apres, Hofra is the way I think his name shows up in most of our English Bibles, he starts losing control of his Egyptians. And he sends out one of his generals to kind of deal with these things, a man by the name of Amasis. And what happens is Amasis decides that maybe he ought to be Pharaoh instead. And so we end up with a bit of a civil war happening at the beginning of 570 BC. And Pharaoh Apres, or Hofra, takes off. And he eventually goes to the Babylonians. Very ironic, I know, but that's history for you sometimes. And he convinces the Babylonians to back him in retaking Egypt. Maybe he said, if I have control of Egypt, I will be a better partner with the Egyptians. And so in 567 BC, just a few years later, Apres comes to Egypt, to the Delta area, and apparently Nebuchadnezzar comes with him. And this is the time when the prophecies of Nebuchadnezzar's invasion of Egypt are fulfilled. And he ends up killing a whole bunch of Egyptians and Judeans, and then also capturing a few and taking them into exile. So all of the prophecies regarding Nebuchadnezzar's invasion of Egypt take place right around 567 BC. But the rest of the story is this, that Apres, that Pharaoh, we know probably as Hofra better, he ends up getting captured by the other side of the Egyptians. And apparently is strangled to death. And then Amasis becomes the new pharaoh, undisputed, of Egypt. And he remains in charge for a very good long time. In fact, he lives long enough that the Persians are almost ready to overtake the area before Amasis is off the throne. So we seem to be somewhere right before Amasis and Apries start having their little civil war and the coming of Nebuchadnezzar and the punishment of these rebel Jews that should never have been in Egypt. So let's read what they were warned shortly before that happened. Jeremiah 44. The word that came to Jeremiah concerning all the Judeans who lived in the land of Egypt, at Migdol, at Tahpenes. Now that's the place where Jeremiah prophesied Nebuchadnezzar had put his portable throne. At Memphis and in the land of Pathros. Most of this is talking about northern Egypt, what was referred to as Lower Egypt because it's the lower part of the Nile. Thus says he who is of hosts, the God of Israel, you have seen all the disaster that I have brought upon Jerusalem and upon all the cities of Judah. So God starts out by reminding them, you know about the destruction, 587 BC, Judah's done in, Jerusalem's done in, the temple's done in, all of that because of sin. Behold, this day they are in a desolation, and no one dwells in them because of the evil they committed, provoking me to anger, in that they went to make offerings and serve other gods that they knew not, neither they, nor you, nor your fathers. Yet persistently I sent to them all my servants, the prophets, saying, oh, do not do this abomination that I hate. But they did not listen or incline their ear to turn from their evil and make no offerings to other gods. So God's just reminding them about the history, about how he sent prophet after prophet after prophet to warn them that judgment was coming if they didn't quit engaging in idolatry, until finally judgment did come. Verse 6, therefore my wrath and my anger were poured out and kindled in the cities of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem, and they became a waste and a desolation as at this day. And now thus says he who is God of hosts, the God of Israel, why do you commit this great evil against yourselves to cut off from you man and woman, infant and child from the midst of Judah, leaving you no remnant? So why have you got it in your head to do yourself in? Verse 8, why do you provoke me to anger with the work of your hands, making offerings to other gods in the land of Egypt where you have come to live, so that you may be cut off and become a curse and taunt among all the nations of the earth? So this is where we find out that bunch that kidnapped Jeremiah and went to Egypt have been worshiping the idols of Egypt. So they have started engaging in the very thing that cost them the promised land. And God is not happy. Verse 9, have you forgotten the evil of your fathers? The evil of the kings of Judah, the evil of their wives, your own evil and the evil of your wives, which they committed in the land of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem? They've not humbled themselves even to this day, nor have they feared, nor walked in my laws and my statutes that I set before you and before your fathers. So you haven't learned a thing, even from the destruction of Jerusalem. Therefore, thus says he who is of the hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will set my face against you for harm, to cut off all Judah. I will take the remnant of Judah who have set their faces to come to the land of Egypt to live, and they shall all be consumed. In the land of Egypt they shall fall, by sword, and by famine they shall be consumed. From the least to the greatest they shall die by the sword and by famine, and they shall become an oath, a horror, a curse, and a taunt. So they're all going to die in Egypt, pretty much the way the rebels died in Judah and Jerusalem. They will die either by direct military action, or they will starve to death, or perhaps they'll be caught up in some sort of disease. I will punish those who dwell in the land of Egypt as I punished Jerusalem, with the sword, with famine, and with pestilence, so that none of the remnant of Judah who have come to live in the land of Egypt shall escape or survive or return to the land of Judah to which they desire to return to dwell there. For they shall not return except some fugitives. So God does make this little caveat. He says, oh yeah, there'll be just a tiny few number that will go back to Egypt as runaways. And then all the people who know that their wives have made offerings to other gods, and all the women who stood by, a great assembly, all the people who lived in Pathros in the land of Egypt, answered Jeremiah. So after hearing Jeremiah the prophet give this message from God, this is what they have to say back. As for the word that you've spoken to us in the name of He who is, we will not listen to you, but we will do everything that we vowed, make offerings to the Queen of Heaven and pour out drink offerings to her, as we did, both we and our fathers, our kings and our officials, in the cities of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem. Now, this Queen of Heaven, that's the title of the female god of fertility and grain and the sky and rain and the earth. We know her as Asherah. In Egypt, she was Ishtar. She's also known as Isis. Ishtar up in Mesopotamia, Isis down in Egypt. She becomes Venus. She is Aphrodite. She is symbolized by the planet Venus as the third brightest light in the night sky, which is interesting because Venus in Hebrew, that's Hillel, which is the name of Satan before he becomes Satan. So this is all tied in to the idea that these guys say, no, we're not going to give up the worship of this pagan female deity. We're going to keep worshiping her the way we've always worshiped her. For then, listen to their excuse, for then we had plenty of food and prospered and saw no disaster. So in their thinking, back in Jerusalem, before the Babylonians arrived, everything was going fine. And they attributed that to the giving of their worship to the Queen of Heaven. For some reason, they did not equate the loss of Jerusalem to the fact that they were worshiping the Queen of Heaven, which is the truth. Verse 18, but since we left off making offerings to the Queen of Heaven and pouring out drink offerings to her, we've lacked everything and have been consumed by sword and famine. The women said, when we made offerings to the Queen of Heaven and poured out drink offerings to her, was it without our husband's approval that we made cakes for her, bearing her image and pouring out drink offerings to her? So the women are feeling like Jeremiah's getting all down on them, and they're like, look, we didn't do that without our husband's approval. They agreed with us that that's the right thing to do, and we're going to go back to that. Now, that's got to be frustrating to poor Jeremiah, but it shouldn't be surprising. After all, they kidnapped him, and they took him down here, even though he warned them repeatedly that was the wrong thing to do. So Jeremiah, verse 20, said to all the people, men and women, all the people that had given him this answer, as for the offerings that you offered in the cities of Judah, in the streets of Jerusalem, you and your fathers, your kings and your officials, and the people of the land, Did not he who is remember them? Did not it come into his mind? He who is could not longer bear your evil deeds and the abominations that you committed. Therefore, your land has become a desolation and a waste and a curse without inhabited as it is this day. It is because you made offerings and because you sinned against he who is and did not obey the voice of he who is or walk in his law and in his statute and in his testimonies that this disaster has happened to you as it is this day. So Jeremiah goes, are you kidding me? Don't you see the connection here? The reason Jerusalem was trashed, the reason the kingdom ended, the reason that multi-thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people either died or went into exile is because you were offering these things to the Queen of Heaven. Jeremiah said to all the people and all the women, hear the word of he who is, all you of Judah who are in the land of Egypt. Thus says he who is of the host, the God of Israel, you and your wives have declared with your mouths and have fulfilled it with your hands, saying, we will surely perform our vows that we've made to make offerings to the Queen of Heaven and to pour out drink offerings to her. Then confirm your vows and perform your vows. And therefore hear the word of he who is, all you of Judah who dwell in the land of Egypt. Behold, I have sworn by my great name, says he who is, that my name shall no more be invoked by the mouth of any man of Judah in all the land of Egypt, saying, as he who is God lives. Behold, I am watching over them for disaster and not for good. So God says, I've had enough of this. I am not going to allow any of you who have made this commitment to the Queen of Heaven, to Ashtaroth, to Asherah, to Ishtar, to Venus, Aphrodite, whatever her name is. I am not going to let any of you now come back and say, oh, as he who is lives, as if you can have both me and her, because you can't. All the men of Judah who are in the land of Egypt shall be consumed by the sword, by famine, until there is an end to them. So this is God's judgment. All of those, when they've been faced with an either-or proposition, you can either have the Queen of Heaven or you can have the true God. You can't have both. And they've chosen the Queen of Heaven, then they have chosen to die. Those who escape the sword shall return from the land of Egypt to the land of Judah, few in number. And all the remnant of Judah who come to the land of Egypt to live shall know whose word will stand, mine or theirs. And this shall be the sign to you, declares he who is, that I will punish you in this place in order that you may know that my words will surely stand against you for harm. So you will die. You will die by the sword. Nebuchadnezzar is going to catch up with you, for many of you. A lot of you will starve to death, either here in Egypt or you'll starve to death back in Judah. Thus says he who is, behold, I will give Hophra, now that's Apres, into the hand of his enemies. Now his enemies are going to be the Egyptians under General Amasis, that civil war that I started talking to you about at the very beginning of today. So he's going to be given into the hands of his enemies and into the hand of those who seek his life, as I gave Zedekiah, king of Judah, into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, who was his enemy and sought his life. So that tells us that Apres, Hophra, has not yet been chased out of Egypt. So the dating of this section has got to be somewhere between later 587 BC, because that's when these refugees took off to Egypt, or before the early part of 570 BC, when the civil war started in Egypt. It is at this point that we need to bring in some chronological events that help us start our transition toward the latter portion of the Babylonian exile and to get ready for the period of the return. Now, the first of those chronological events is mentioned at the end of the book of Jeremiah. Jeremiah chapter 52, starting at verse 31. It says, "In the 37th year of the exile of Jehoiakim, king of Judah." Now, you may have forgotten who Jehoiakim is. He was a kid, and his father had been captured and prepared for transport into exile by the Babylonians. But then he dies suddenly, and he ends up with a donkey's burial. That is, his body's just thrown off to the side. And then the Babylonians decide they really need to have someone of royal status in exile that they can control the rest of the Jewish population. And so they insist that the heir, which is a young man, about 8 years old, surrender himself along with his mother, the queen mother, the widow of the recently deceased king, to be transported into Babylonian exile. And they hold out for a few months, but eventually he surrenders himself. And away they go. And so he's been here for 37 years now. So he's now in his 40s. Well, what happens is Nebuchadnezzar dies. So he's the one that had taken Jehoiakim into exile. And when the Babylonian king dies, the new king gets to set all the new standards. Everything's reset. And so this new king apparently decides to release the exile. And so that's what we read. In the 12th month, on the 25th day of the month, that's basically around the equinox, the spring equinox of 562 BC. So in March of 562 BC. Evil Merodach. Now that's our English transliteration from the King James, and it's been just been passed down through many generations. His name is maybe a little bit better written as Amal Marduk. Marduk being one of the patron gods of the Babylonians. So Amal Marduk, king of Babylon, in the year that he became king, lifted up the head of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, and brought him out of prison. So Nebuchadnezzar dies in the late winter of 562, and the new king, his son, the heir, comes to power, and part of his coronation celebration includes letting this king have his freedom in exile. Now, he's not going to let him go back because there's no kingdom down there. Jerusalem's destroyed. Judea is desolate. But he is going to let him have his freedom and is going to treat him with respect. Verse 32, he spoke kindly to him, gave him a seat above the kings, the seats of the kings who were with him in Babylon. See, they'd captured a whole bunch of other kings. And so those kings are here showing their respect to King Amal Marduk. And Jehoiakim is placed above them. It could be that Amal Marduk had developed some sort of relationship with Jehoiakim previous to this. They might have been roughly the same age for all we know. But anyway, verse 33, Jehoiakim put off his prison garments, so he's no longer counted as a prisoner. Every day of his life, he dined regularly at the king's table. For his allowance, a regular allowance was given him by the king according to his daily need, until the day of his death as long as he lived. So he is now like a little pet king in the court of Almul Marduk, the new king of Babylon. And so that all happened in 562 BC, and that's how the book of Jeremiah ends. And it's kind of hinting there that the end of the exile is on the way. Things are starting to be closed out because of the death of Nebuchadnezzar, who started the exile whenever he took the first Judeans, among them Daniel, into Babylonian exile. Now, some of the other things that happened during this time period is that Almul-Marduk does not stay on the throne for very long. He is assassinated by his brother-in-law, who decides he wants to be king instead. And so Almul-Marduk is dead in 560 BC, so just a couple of years after the event we just read. But his assassin doesn't get to stay on the throne very long either, because he dies. They try to put his son on the throne, but that's very short-lived. And so what happens in 556 BC, the son-in-law of the late Nebuchadnezzar, a man named Nabonidus, who has married the daughter of Nebuchadnezzar, he becomes the preferred king of Babylon for the majority of the people. And so he becomes the new king of kings. And tomorrow we'll talk about how his kingdom becomes the backdrop to the next story in the book of Daniel.